Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Caitlin Roper. She's a feminist activist, writer, and PhD candidate. She's also campaigns manager for Collective Shout for a World Free of Sexploitation, a grassroots campaigning movement challenging the objectification of women and the sexualization of girls in media, advertising, and popular culture. So first, thank you for your work on the world. And second, thank you for being on the program.
Thanks very much for having me, for your interest.
So we can talk about the generalized sexualization of girls in the media, advertising, and popular culture too, but I'd really like to focus for a little while on so-called sex dolls. And what are sex dolls and what's wrong with them?
Sure. So I think it's important to make clear from the outset that I'm not referring to blow-up sex dolls. The sex dolls that are being manufactured today are much more realistic. So the products I'm talking about are lifelike, anatomically correct silicone dolls in the form of women and marketed for men's sexual use. So they're typically designed according to pornographic standards. So, you know, with really exaggerated sexual features like enormous breasts and tiny waists and proportions that just would not exist in real life. They can be purchased as is, or some companies allow buyers to customize their own dolls. They can choose a body type and a face, or they can select the eye color, the breast size, custom nipples, freckles, how they want to have the pubic hair styled, and things like that. So in that sense, they're really quite distinct from blow-up dolls. They're much more realistic, and they allow buyers to design their own ideal woman for sex on demand. And in terms of sex robots, some companies claim to sell sex robots, but probably they're more appropriately described as robotic dolls or mechanized dolls, because they're the same silicone sex dolls that I've just described, but they're equipped with artificial intelligence software. So they have an animatronic head and they can be paired with an app on a smartphone or a device. Now, we call them sex robots, but they're still quite primitive. We're not really there with the whole sci-fi sex robots thing that a lot of people probably imagine. They can't walk, but they do have movable joints and motorized features. Some models can perform various automated sexual positions or moan in response to genital penetration. And then you have some companies that reportedly offer pre-programmed personalities for users to choose from. So True Companion has manufactured, or they claim to have manufactured, a sex robot called Roxy. There's a little bit of speculation within the academic community if that's actually the case, but they reportedly released this robot, which offers a range of different personalities you can choose from. So there's like Young Yoko, S&M Susan, Frigid Farah, and a couple of others. But the development of these products, sex dolls and robots, but robots in particular, has attracted a fair amount of media attention and public interest over the last few years. We're seeing sex dolls and robots as the subjects of Hollywood films, TV programs, documentaries, and not surprisingly, they feature in pornography. And sex industry representatives claim that this robot technology is one of the biggest trends in the industry, and really predicting that this is the way of the future for the industry. And as some evidence of that, in a number of countries around the world now, we have sex doll brothels that have opened up where men can go and rent sex dolls by the hour. And I just want to briefly touch on how these dolls are marketed, because I think that's actually really important. The marketing of these dolls and robots is significant because the dolls and robots are promoted as though they are women. So you can go into these sex doll manufacturer companies, their websites, and it looks like a website for a brothel. You enter these websites and you see sexy pictures of Tanya and Renee and Willow and Stephanie and whoever else, but they're all sex dolls. But if you weren't looking closely, you'd believe that they're living women because they are so realistic. So the way they're marketed, they're given names, they have personality traits attributed to them. Again, we're talking about latex dolls or silicone dolls, and personality traits like sweet and playful, and sometimes even entire backstories dedicated to individual dolls. So there's a lot of emphasis on how real they are. And the promotional material often promises not just sex, but the ability to meet emotional needs too. So the next...
Well, and wait. Sorry. I was just going to say, I mean, it's not even true about sex. It's not sex, and it's not... I mean, it's not... I mean, it's masturbation, which, I mean, I've got nothing against masturbation, but it's not even sex.
That's right, and that's a good point, because there's, on one hand, people saying it's sex, other people saying it's masturbation, but yeah, that's right, we're not talking about another human being, we're talking about an object, but it's a humanized object, and not just humanized, but designed or gendered female, so that makes it sort of a more interesting discussion in terms of the implications of these products. It's not just sex. It's not sex because it is this one-sided sexual interaction with an object, and that's not how sex works.
So I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, please.
No, sure. So the next point I was just going to make is just turning now to what these products actually mean for women and girls, and this is something that I'm really interested in, just the implications of these products for women and girls. Female-bodied sex dolls and robots represent the literal sexual objectification of women. They're embodied representations of women designed, you know, purely for men's sexual use. They are stereotypically feminine, they're hypersexualized, and just absolutely without autonomy because, you know, it's an object. Woman, it means that woman becomes a role that can then be occupied by a product, a rubber doll. So like a literal object can be a stand-in for a woman. And these sex dolls and robots are always ready and available for men's sexual use, like these perfect compliant women. And through using a female-bodied sex doll or robot, men get to experience this sexual experience with what is essentially a female sex slave. And there's a paper by lawyer Cinziana Gattu on this topic. And she makes the point that the sex robot looks and feels like a real woman who is programmed into submission. And then we also have sex robots that are reportedly, you know, intentionally programmed to refuse consent, like True Companion's Roxy Frigid Farah personality, which is one that's come up, allowing users to simulate rape. And then we also have child sex dolls and potentially robots, which I think we'll come back to shortly. But so basically my point is this, in short, this is not good for women. These are products that reinforce the sexual objectification of women and female subordination.
So I know this is not the point, but there's a question I've always wondered with you, how much are these things?
How much, like in terms of cost?
Yeah.
Thousands of dollars. It depends. I'm going to guess a little bit here because it's been a while since I've really looked. But I think for a standard lifelike sex doll, maybe $3,000 to $5,000. And looking at quite a bit more for a robotic one.
I mean, I know that this is off the point, but it's whenever I've heard about these, it's always really – I mean, that's as much as a used car. And it's – that strikes me as one would have to be really devoted to one's fetish in order to I mean, one would have to be have a very strong interest in that fetish in order to spend that much money, it seems to me. And I know that's not the point this is harmful to women, but it feels like, there are huge problems in the world, and there are huge problems. I mentioned this before we went on air that we're recording this the day of the Super Bowl, which is not only a day of rampant sexual abuse outside the stadium, but also the halftime show was incredibly pornographied. And so am I being clear at all with it? That requires an intense devotion to actually to I mean, when one can masturbate for free. I mean, it's just I mean, what we're talking about is ultimately a really, I'm just, the reason I'm stammering is because I'm horrified, and I'm horrified at so many levels. One is that level. Another is this is like, okay, here's what I'm trying to get at too, is that this feels to me like a three-dimensional piece of pornography. Is that, stop my stammering and just take any of this anywhere you want to go.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with your comments about pornography. I think Melissa Farley, who's done some really important research on prostitution, she described these products, these female-bodied sex robots, as mechanized pornography. And I thought that was a really, that was pretty switched on. We have radical feminist theorists who talk about pornography as the graphic form of women's inequality and subordination. And that's how I see these dolls. I think that they're this material form of women's inequality and subordination. So I do think that's right, just with the comparison to pornography. And even in the approaches from various academics, you can see the parallels with pornography. You have, and I'll talk about this in a bit more detail, but you have a range of different stances within academia on this topic. There's actually a lot of support, which was really interesting to me, but I'll come back to that. But there's a number of academics who are not so supportive. They're a little bit cautious, but still generally supportive or open to the products. So they acknowledge the potential risks and harms to women through, reinforcing sexist stereotypes, contributing to the sexual objectification of women, or even in terms of consent and what it means when men can purchase a doll or a robot that is constantly available for sexual use and never refuses. But the interesting thing I'm seeing from these academics, which feels a lot like pornography and the discussions we're having about pornography, is they're arguing that the solution to bad sex robots is slightly better sex robots, that we should create feminist sex robots. So they have a few ideas for how that can be achieved, like having more women involved in the design process, more diversity in the products, and also in regards to issues with consent, this idea that they can just design robots that are required to give affirmative signals of consent or that are programmed to randomly refuse their user. So it's very much following the script of the pornography industry, pitching so-called ethical or feminist porn as an alternative. But, I mean, it's really reaching, I think. I don't know how you could possibly design a female-bodied sex doll or robot that exists precisely to be used sexually by men in a way that advances the status of women or liberates women from patriarchal oppression.
I don't think that anybody has ever suggested that everything or, in fact, much that comes out of academia is actually very smart. I say this as somebody with a master's, but it's that the what you were saying about us having more diversity. So what, they're going to make sex dolls of many colors and many body shapes, and that is supposed to be better?
Yeah, it's really a ridiculous notion, I think. But
a masturbation tool that then sometimes tells you no.
Who wants to buy one of those? I can't imagine how marketable these feminist sex robots will be. Like, it's like we have these discussions about ethical porn and say, ethical porn is the answer. Setting aside whether we actually believe that could theoretically exist or whether it does exist, I mean, if no one's watching it, then how is this a solution anyway? So if we're saying, we just need feminist sex bots or ethical sex bots, but who's interested in them anyway? That's, if men are looking to get a sex doll or a sex robot, they're, not super concerned with advancing feminism.
Well, and what I would see, they already have the, whatever her name is, the frigid something or other, that so if they have a doll that is programmed to sometimes say no, since the whole point of this is to you bought this doll to use it. So if it's going to say no, I don't know how having one that sometimes doesn't consent is going to be any different than the one that promotes rape fantasies anyway.
That's right. And some men will precisely, that's what they'll enjoy. They'll like that very component. So it's really, it's not helpful. But in terms of academia, on this topic, there really is very little empirical data, which is not surprising given that this technology is relatively new and the proliferation of these products is limited. So there is some empirical research, things like surveys gauging community attitudes and some analysis of sex doll consumer testimonials and sex doll owner online communities. So we found things like that men are more likely to regard sex robots as useful, that men are significantly more likely than women to be open to using a sex doll, and that the vast majority of sex doll owners are heterosexual men, which none of this is surprising, but most of the literature on sex dolls and robots in academia is not empirical, it's speculative. It's mainly things like philosophical discussions about the social and ethical implications of the products or potential uses for sex robot technology. And when I started reading the existing literature on sex dolls and robots, I was surprised that there is quite a bit of support for their development within academia. Some of these researchers pitch the products, like they actually put it out there as a positive development that should be actively encouraged, and believe that these products will promote sexual well-being and contribute to better health, quality of life, overall happiness, all of that. So there's, among these academics, there's a lot of different possible uses for the products being proposed. David Levy, who's one of the most prominent voices in support of sex robots, believes that they could function as intimate partners, and predicts that by 2050, humans will be falling in love with and marrying sex robots. And aside from companionship, there's a lot of other uses for these products being pitched by academics. They're saying they could be used by individuals who are physically or mentally disabled, by the elderly, by those who have lost a partner, or with social anxiety, that they could be an alternative to purchasing sex, or even that they could be used within intimate relationships. And this really got me, the idea that they strengthen relationships by providing the partner with a higher sex drive and outlet, and thus apparently reducing friction in the relationship. So they're good for relationships too. Or that they could function as an outlet for individuals who want to participate in, you know, violent, sadistic, or illegal sexual practices. So as I'm reading all of this and all of these arguments, something that really struck me about all of these proposals for sex robots and how they could be used and all this support is that for the most part, what's going on is these academics have taken a gender-neutral approach to a really gendered issue. So this is not just sex dolls and robots and people using them. It's pornified, hyper-sexualized, female-bodied sex dolls and robots marketed for men's sexual use. And the reality is that the vast majority of sex dolls and robots or robotic dolls being produced are embodied female, with an overwhelmingly male market buying them. And even manufacturers, they're confirming this, that nearly all of the people who buy these dolls are heterosexual men, often single. And even one Japanese company claimed to be making these dolls in support of men because, you know, they're saying these days women are a bit dominant and don't pay enough attention to men. So this really is a gendered issue. While there are some male-bodied sex dolls out there, these are not in response to known market demand, and the quality is said to be noticeably inferior. And on some websites where they're sold, they're marketed as for use by men, but so they're in the category of gay. So this, it's still very much about men and being driven by men. So really what we're talking about, and we need to be clear about this, is an industry where pornified female body dolls and robots are manufactured for men's sexual use. And another important consideration that, again, is just almost entirely absent from the academic literature, and maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but it's any consideration of a wider patriarchal context in which these products are developed. So while academics are framing this as an issue of people using sex dolls and the ethics of that or the potential of that, rather than men's sexual use of female-bodied dolls within a system of institutionalized male dominance and female subordination. These are female body dolls being developed, purchased, and used primarily by men in a social environment where male violence against women remains a serious global problem, and where women and girls are already raped, beaten, abused, and prostituted by men. And what's happening is they're taking a gender-neutral approach to this technology, or claiming that men and women will use sex dolls and robots equally. And what that does, it obscures the gendered nature of this issue. So we're not seeing much of a feminist approach to this issue within academia, and it's actually being framed as an issue of men's sexual deprivation and how we can better meet their needs.
So thank you for that. And I have a few things. One of them is that given how, frankly, woman-hating a lot of academia is, it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, academia is what has produced queer theory, which is really problematical on many levels. And then there's another thing I want to just highlight that you said, that you talked about the guy David Levy or Levy.
That's
who,
right.
Who said that people will be marrying robots. And he has a book called Love and Sex with Robots. And
that's right.
I just want to, I believe that we have to put this not only in the context of the woman hating that is just absolutely central to this culture, but we have to put this, I am horrified that you and I can be having an intelligent discussion where you or I uttered the phrase humans marrying robots.
Yeah.
And that, so that not only does this have to be put in the context of woman hating, I think it has to be put in the context of body hating too. And in fact, human hating. Not to take away from the sex-based issues at all, but this is absolutely nuts that you could have academics or anybody arguing that one can fall in love with, or one can marry, or one can have a relationship with, whatever words we want, with a mechanical masturbation tool. Sorry again to keep sort of derailing this, but it's just I'm flabbergasted by the fact that you and I are even having this conversation.
Well, it sounds like where you're at now is where I've been as I've been reading and trying to do a literature review. I'm just like, what am I reading? And yeah, and it's been, maybe I shouldn't have been so surprised. And to be fair, there is, it's not all horrible within academia. There is one notable exception in this discussion, and that's feminist anthropologist Kathleen Richardson. I'm not sure if you've heard of her work. She launched the Campaign Against Sex Robots in 2015 on the grounds that sex robots objectify women and children and negatively impact human relationships. And she's doing really important work. I was lucky enough to spend some time with Kathleen last year when she was in Australia for a conference, and to see her present on this issue. But as far as I know, she's the only academic to take a strong stand against the development of female-bodied sex dolls and robots. She published an open letter a couple of years back against sex dolls and robots, which was signed by a number of feminist organizations and other individuals. But it's interesting to me, just out in the real world, you know, in the media and in terms of feminist journalists and writers and things like that, we are seeing objections to these products and people calling it out for what it is, but just not really within academia, aside from Kathleen.
And you.
Well, and me. Yeah.
So can we talk a little bit about child sex dolls too? Because that is evidently becoming a thing.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So child sex dolls are essentially, they're what they sound like. They are lifelike, anatomically correct sex dolls designed to resemble children, specifically girls. Now, I'm sure at some stage there will be child sex dolls modeled on the bodies of boys, but I haven't seen them yet. But I'm sure they're coming one day. But so right now, this is what we're dealing with. Typically, their bodies, facial features, and weight are similar to a living child, but they are also designed to accommodate an adult male's penis. They can be manufactured with a variety of different facial expressions, and some of them appear to be crying or in pain. These dolls are very lifelike, like I said, and the promotional material really emphasizes their youth and innocence. In some images, advertising images in photo galleries that I've seen, these dolls are designed to look like prepubescent girls. They're photographed with pigtails and soft toys, yet also portrayed as sexually inviting. There's other images which present dolls that look have the appearance of preteen girls as ready and available for sex, sometimes wearing lingerie or fishnet stockings or just nude, and even posed with BDSM gear. Some of the most disturbing images that I've seen are the ones that appear to replicate scenes of child sexual abuse. There's some voyeuristic kind of images like upskirting pictures or photos of dolls in the bath from a distance. So it's kind of gives you that impression, you know, they're dolls, but that they're being watched without their knowledge. So that kind of predator kind of vibe. And one of the worst that I've seen is an image of a petite doll that I probably guess is intended to look like a girl of about 6 or 7. So an image of this doll lying face down in a bed with her underpants having been pulled down. And child sex dolls like this are already on the market. They have been for years, and they've even been sold through mainstream online retailers like Amazon, eBay, and Wish. And experts believe that child sex robots will be next and that they might already be in production. And some countries have introduced legislation to criminalize child sex dolls, or else they've utilized existing legislation and just classified the dolls as obscene or child pornography material. In Australia, just last September, we had federal legislation passed to criminalize child sex dolls. Now, in the US, there is legislation works, the Creeper Act, but it seems to have stalled. So I'm not really sure about the current status of that legislation. I do know that a few states have banned them. I believe Kentucky, Florida, and Tennessee have either banned them or are in the process of banning them. So, yeah, that's kind of a general overview on child sex dolls, what they are. If that's not self-explanatory, I suppose.
So one of the arguments that I have seen proposed in mainstream media, and I'm guessing academia, is that if you allow men to have child sex dolls, if you allow men, I don't like to use the word pedophile because file means love. If you, well, I'm just going to say it. If you allow child rapists, those who want to, let's go value neutral, those who want to have sex with children, those who want to rape children, whatever we want to call it, if you allow them to have these dolls, they will use the dolls instead of children. I've seen that argument made.
Yeah, that's right. So I've seen the argument made, obviously, but I was surprised by the academic support for this idea. I mean, it was one thing to see academic support for female-bodied sex dolls and robots in general. That was a little bit surprising. But then to come across this literature encouraging the development of child sex dolls, I was quite surprised. Maybe I'm a bit naive as academia. But yes, this is an argument that has been made, and it's a legitimate argument within academia. It's gaining traction. So some academics have proposed that child sex dolls be made available to pedophiles for therapeutic purposes and pitch child sex dolls as a solution to child sexual abuse. This idea that if these men can simulate child sexual abuse on childlike dolls, then it will somehow prevent their abuse of living children. Among these academics, pedophilia is regarded as a legitimate sexual orientation. They view it as something that is unchangeable and outside the control of the individual. So the approach seems to be generally sympathetic to pedophiles, we'll use that term, and their, quote, unfortunate situation, with the view that sexual outlets like child sex dolls should be made available to pedophiles. And this group of academics tend to dismiss objections to child sex dolls as being just about societal outrage and moral disgust over the idea of so-called adult child sex. And one of these... Sorry?
Which, by the way, just I want to say very quickly, which, by the way, is the exact same argument that the queer theorists from Michel Foucault to to Gail Rubin to Pat Califia, up through Judith Butler, have said that this is their objection to actual pedophilia too, is that the problem is not that the act harms the child. The thing that harms the child is the social stigma against it, which just makes me really angry. And anyway, that's so they make the same argument about real children. I just wanted to insert that. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so one of these men is a psychological scientist from Nottingham Trent University, Craig Harper, and he wrote on his Twitter that criminalizing child sex doll ownership is, quote, literally creating an offense without a victim for reasons of moral disgust. And these advocates for child sex dolls also, there's this tendency to frame the dolls as just a sex toy like any other. In an online discussion about the products, Canadian psychologist and neuroscientist James Cantor tweeted, "I'm okay with latex sex dolls and I don't care what they look like." And then again, in response to a news article about pedophiles facing jail time for importing child sex dolls, he wrote, "Australia protecting society from crimes against latex, thought crimes against latex." And then there's another organization, a US-based organization called Prostasia Foundation, and they campaign against laws criminalizing child sex dolls. They say that for the government to get involved is, you know, unconstitutional and immoral because it's just the personal and private use of sex toys. So I find these arguments pretty disingenuous because these advocates of child sex dolls seem to be suggesting that the childlike appearance of these dolls is incidental or irrelevant even, rather than precisely why users are drawn to the products. Child sex dolls aren't just latex sex toys. They're products that are intentionally designed to look and feel like a real child. They're designed to facilitate men's embodied fantasy experience of raping a little girl. So if these childlike dolls are really nothing more than a sex toy, if they're just a bit of latex, then why do they need to be shaped like a child? Why are the products marketed in such a way as to eroticize predation on children? And, you know, why do we have to have childlike dolls manufactured that appear to be suffering, crying, or in pain? Like, this ability to simulate child sexual abuse on these products is exactly the draw card, I think.
And yeah, so can you make more arguments? I mean, of course, I'm agreeing with everything you're saying, but can you make more arguments? Can you make the argument really explicit as to why you think that a quote child sex doll is not a healthy thing for children, for society as a whole?
Sure. I guess, first of all, this very idea that, you know, men like this need sexual outlets. So, I mean, there's really no evidence for this previously popular idea that men perpetrate sexual violence against women, children, and even other men due to uncontrollable sexual desire because they just don't have an outlet for their urges.
They've got a hand.
Yeah. There's plenty of sexual outlets available. That's right. They have a hand. And, you know,
maybe you could actually be such a person that somebody might want to have sex with you. Just the thought.
Well, that's let's not get crazy. But yeah, so there really are so many sexual outlets available to men as it is. And, you know, we keep saying, oh, but men need to have access to women in the sex industry or to pornography or to whatever it is. And having access to all of these supposed outlets has not actually stopped men from raping. And in reality, sexual violence remains prevalent across the globe. So I think we need to just – why are we putting stock in this idea that if men have just one more sexual outlet, this particular sexual outlet, that it will stop their sexual abuse of children? And then you have, on the other hand, this notion that not only will child sex dolls you know, not be effective in preventing child sexual abuse, but that they could actually escalate the problem, that they legitimize and normalize the sexual use and abuse of children. And rather than actually satisfying users' urges, it's much more likely that they could reinforce and strengthen them. And there's links been made by legislators and law enforcement between child sex dolls and sexual offending against children. So we already know that there has been a relationship established in the research between viewing child exploitation material and contact offending against children. But now it appears that there's also a link between child sex doll ownership and possession of child abuse material. So in 2018, there was a police raid in Melbourne where police seized child sex dolls as well as child exploitation material, including videos of children and babies being tortured. In the UK, 20 out of 26 recent child sex doll offenders were found in possession of child abuse material. And in another instance in the UK, there was a surge in seizures of child sex dolls, which actually helped police to be able to identify previously unknown suspected pedophiles. So that meant there were more men being charged and more facing allegations linked to child exploitation images. So this idea that men will, you know, they'll use child sex dolls instead of, you know, hurting actual children, that's a really flawed argument.
Okay, this is going to totally date me, and you're from another country anyway, so you might not know this reference, but have you ever heard of the TV show from the 70s in the United States called Marcus Welby, M.D.?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, it was a show about this very kind doctor who would blah, blah, blah. It was just a regular TV show, no big deal. But the point is, there were like 50,000 or 100,000 people per year would write to the producers of that show asking Marcus Welby, M.D., for advice, for medical advice. Mm-hmm. And likewise, I have talked with women who have discussed how pornography has affected teenage sex lives, and how because of what boys perceive or what boys see in pornography, they are treating girls differently because of this. Mm-hmm. And so it seems to me disingenuous and false and stupid to say that creating a sexual outlet that is specifically in the form of a child is not going to harm children. I mean, that just seems disingenuous, stupid, and completely false to me, because we already know how pornography is affecting people's sex lives. Mm. I'm done. Yeah, take it anywhere you want.
Yeah, and that's right. And the argument they're making is that we just don't have the evidence. We don't have empirical evidence on this issue. But I mean, I don't know how this kind of research could be undertaken in an ethical way. There has been one report from the Australian Institute of Criminology, and what they did is they reviewed the literature on sex dolls, on child exploitation material, and sexual offending against children. And they came to the conclusion that there's no evidence that child sex dolls will prevent child abuse. And they found that child sex dolls could present a risk of escalation in sexual offences against children. And these patterns of escalation have already been documented in consumers of child abuse material. And some academics make the point as well that using a child sex doll could be a step further than viewing child exploitation material, in that physically it's a much closer experience to actually sexually abusing a child. And it's escalated because it's gone from thoughts and fantasies to real life behaviors, as, you know, someone's had to go out and obtain a doll and then use it. But really, one of the things, again, just as we've talked about sex dolls in general and the academic support for those products, again, there's just this failure to take the wider culture into account. So they're saying, oh, the answer is we just, you know, men have these desires to rape children, so we just have to meet those needs. We have to provide an outlet for them. But we're not talking about why what are the factors behind this, what's actually driving this. We're not talking about a wider cultural context, like a culture that eroticizes girls. And, you know, if you look at Collective Shout's website, we've been documenting, you know, this is one of the areas that we work on. We document the many ways that girls are sexualized. And if you look at media and popular culture, girls are frequently depicted in adultified and sexualized ways. They're presented as though they're sexually available and appealing. Teen porn remains one of Pornhub's most popular genres year after year. And I'm not sure how it is in the States, but here in Australia, barely legal porn, which is illegal here, featuring girls with pigtails, flat chest braces, so adult women styled as though they are children, it's still widely available. It's sold in newsagents and petrol stations. This idea that youth and being a girl is sexy and appealing to men. We fetishize schoolgirls. And many women and girls report that they first experienced sexual harassment from adult men as children. So with this culture, with this treatment of girls, can we really separate men's demand for child sex dolls modeled on the bodies of pubescent and prepubescent girls from like a wider culture in which girls are sexualized and treated as appropriate objects of men's sexual entertainment? So rather than just catering to men's sexual desires by making child sex dolls accessible, we should be going to the source. We should be actually considering these cultural factors at play, legitimizing these predatory attitudes towards girls.
Thank you for that. Something that else that I find horrifying in all of this is the amount of positive coverage that this whole industry receives. This is not an issue that I work on, but mm-hmm. I nonetheless have read any number of articles saying, gosh, isn't this an interesting area to explore? The sex doll industry in general, not specifically child sex dolls.
Yeah.
But isn't technology amazing? Isn't this just, gosh, how weird and wonderful the world is? And I tend to be pretty appalled by that. I don't understand. I find it tremendously difficult to. I find things problematical when they are attempting to blur the distinction between living, breathing women or children, and objects, and by making the object. I don't know what you mean by robotic in the first place. I mean, does that mean that the pelvis shifts back and forth? I mean, by making them more realistic, I think that's incredibly dangerous on every level. And I'm just horrified by the whole thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. There is actually a lot of kind of uncritical support for these products, or well, even maybe not intended as support, but just acceptance. Yeah, you're right. Like, oh, isn't this interesting? And I think particularly with sex robots, it's just like this sexy topic. You know, there's a lot of media articles about it when there's new developments and things like that. And people just kind of, oh, that's really fascinating. But we're not taking a feminist approach at all.
So I'm gonna ask you a question that's very personal, and you don't have to answer. Mm-hmm. But you know, I've brought this up with Gayle Dines before, because Gayle Dines gets accused, because she's against pornography, she is accused of being against sex. And mm-hmm. she laughs and says, that's like saying that because you're against McDonald's, you're against food. Mm. And so just to be clear, you're not saying anything bad about, I mean, you're not, the sort of sex posies would try to say that you're a pearl clutching prude. Mm-hmm. And none of my business, but I mean, Do you hate sex? Why do you hate sex so much?
I get that a lot. And I think that's just what happens when you're working in this space. If you're critical of the exploitation of women or sexual objectification or pornography, then that's the response. Like, oh, why do you hate sex? Because we've just like so accepted or internalized this idea that pornography and sex are the same thing when they're really not. So yeah, I'm not anti-sex, not by any means anti-sex. I'm against the sexual exploitation of women. And yeah, that's...
Well, that was why I brought the thing up early on about it, just a brothel. When I first read about those robot sex robot brothels, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, so wait, what's actually happening is you're going to a public masturbation place where you pay.
Mm.
I mean, that's why I'm sort of pedantic about using the word sex. It's not sex.
That's right.
So we have like, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes left, and I think you've made a very strong case. But so A, what do you want people to do? B, how can people learn more about this? C, what do you hope happens? And D, anything I haven't asked that you want to talk about?
Okay, that's a few things all at once. I'm just trying to think. I suppose in terms of where to from here, there are countries, like I said, that have been looking at legislation against child sex dolls. I don't think that's going to happen with adult sex dolls and robots, but I do think it's really important that we're having these conversations, that people are actually aware of what's going on here, particularly when it pertains to child sex dolls, that people are aware of what's going on. I think the way that these issues are being approached in academia, they would really be surprised, I think, to learn of the support for these products and the way that they're being framed in terms of men's sexual deprivation. So we have academics arguing that men are suffering due to unfulfilled sexual needs, and that they need to have these kind of products. And I think people would just be really surprised that these arguments are being made, and it's important that we're aware of how this is being handled. And again, just the connection to pornography, this is something, these products, they arise out of a porn culture, and a culture that is hostile to women, and where women are sexually objectified and regarded as less and inferior to men. So I think, I guess ultimately, I just sort of say that these academic arguments in support of child sex dolls are pretty baseless and unconvincing, and they serve vested interests. And throughout this whole, I guess the whole issue here is men's sexual preferences being prioritized over the rights of women and girls, and this failure to acknowledge the gender dynamics involved in the production of these products. So really, in terms of where to from here, that's a great question. I'm doing my research and I've still got a couple of years to go on that. It'd be really good to check out Kathleen Richardson's website, Campaign Against Sex Robots. She's doing some really incredible work. And other than that, I think it's hard to know where to go, because this is it's this new issue. I mean, like you said, it is very much related to pornography. But I hope this is something that does get a bit more interest, and not just the issue in general, but, you know, from a feminist perspective, that we need to be talking about it. We need to be considering the implications of these products for women and girls, and also looking at legislation and how that factors in as well.
So one last thing, can you give a 30-second or 1-minute version of how people can learn more about your work and also Collective Shout?
Sure. So a lot of my work is through Collective Shout. So Collective Shout is a grassroots campaigning movement in Australia. We challenge the objectification of women and the sexualization of girls in media, advertising, and popular culture. So we're doing a lot of work there. We've been running for 10 years now, and we target advertisers, corporations, marketers, and media, which exploit the bodies of women and girls to sell products and services. And we campaign to change their behavior. So we've had a lot of pretty big campaigns and victories, probably too many to list right now. But definitely check out, you don't have to be in Australia, check out www.collectiveshout.org, and you can engage with more of our work, and you can find us on social media. If you're interested in my work, probably good to find me on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, I'm at Caitlin_Roper.
And spell it, please. Spell Caitlin.
Sorry, that's Caitlin_Roper, R-O-P-E-R. So you can find me there. You can engage with me there, and odds are I'll be pretty friendly, I think.
Oh, well, thank you so much for your work on the world, and thank you for being on the program. I'd like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Caitlin Roper. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.
Thanks very much for having me.